Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. How you doing tonight, Aaron?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm okay. Got a sniffle, so my voice might be a little cracky.
It's like the second week you've been sick now.
This is the second time I've been sick in this new year. And the first time I got sick, I was sick for like 3 weeks. And I have only been feeling better for like 2 weeks. And now I'm already got something else. So not a good thing.
Before we get to the episode, Justin, I wanted to let our audience know that after season two of Framed ended, which I also am a host on, we ended up with 11 episodes and some questions. For those of you who were looking for more answers, more information, Framed has now released episode 12. It's titled Addendum Missing Pieces. Head back out to the Framed feed. You can look for it in any podcast app. Look for Framed, an investigative story, or just type in Framed. You'll see it. It has kind of a black and red logo, and download Addendum Missing Pieces.
So, Aaron, tonight's case is a surprising one to me. It's going to revolve around domestic violence and domestic abuse, something that probably doesn't get talked about enough or handled seriously enough in this country. So, with that, what are we talking about tonight?
We're talking about the murder of Jennifer Martell. This happened August 13th, 2013 in Waltham, Massachusetts.
So it was August 13th at around 7:43 p.m. Jennifer calls 911 and she's pleading for help. She's explaining to the 911 operator that Jared suffers from depression, has aggressive behaviors that have been getting worse. He's been taking two medications for about 2 years now. She says he's a very violent person who is on a lot of medication, who might need some serious help because he's very angry and has a very bad temper, and he has a history of hitting people if you look him up. She goes on to explain that he smashed an ex-girlfriend's nose and slammed the back of her head. This 911 call is kind of spotty when the audio comes in and out. She talks about his temper. She says he's very controlling. She's just pretty much trying to say, like, I need your help, But at the same time, Aaron, I get a little bit of, she still cares about this person. She's saying he's on medication and he's angry. There's this sense of sympathy that I hear from her when she's making this 911 call, even though she is being victimized and she's having her head put into a mirror.
Now, what we can tell, though, is that Jared's temper seemed to flare because Jennifer wanted to watch a show with a friend, right?
Yeah. And he disagreed with this and decided to fly off the handle.
Now, the neighbor had said that she believes that Remy has become mentally unstable and she is fearful for her friend's safety. Now, obviously, if you're a victim in a domestic violence situation, there are steps you can take, right? And in this case, Jennifer requested an emergency abuse order, and she was granted this.
So the police are going to show up and enforce this. And they're going to take Jared Remy into custody.
Now, this affidavit states, Jared Remy and I got into an argument over visiting my friend who lives next door. I brought my daughter next door at my friend's with me. Jared continued to call my cell phone and yelled at me to come home. So I went back home alone without my daughter to talk. We continued to argue. Then Jared grabbed my neck and head and slammed my head into the bathroom mirror. Then I tried to get away, so I pushed back and tried to leave. I went back next door and Jared followed me and banged on the door. Then went back to our place to get the key and let himself into my friend's house. I asked him to leave, but he continued to come in and yell at me. So I feared for my safety and called the cops.
And if you've ever seen this guy, Jared is huge. He's built like a tree trunk. He doesn't have a neck. His arms are massive and he's covered in tattoos. He's very intimidating looking and will easily overpower most people because he's an amateur bodybuilder.
So the next day, August 14th, Jennifer was to go to court so she could renew this emergency restraining order, but she didn't show up. So the prosecutor's office spoke with her, and Jennifer replied that she wasn't going to ask for a new one. Now, Justin, before we go on, without knowing why she made that decision, there are reasons why victims don't renew orders.
Yeah. She might have been talking with Jared or talking with his family. It's not really clear.
But she could have made this decision because she feels like he's remorseful, that he's going to make some changes, or she might be fearful.
Yeah.
There are just any number of reasons. But she also spoke with a victim's witness advocate. She told this advocate that she didn't feel the need to go to court. She said she was not staying at the apartment and had her daughter with her. She didn't give them a phone number to reach her at or an address. Now, obviously, there are possible conditions of release, but Jennifer, while saying she did understand that, she didn't want the conditions. So she had until 4 o'clock that afternoon to renew the order, but she seemed certain that she wouldn't renew it. So what happens when the victim doesn't show up to court? Well, obviously the judge has nothing else to do but say, there's nothing to do here, right?
So Jared Remy is released on August 15th, 2013. He will end up stabbing Jennifer Martell to death outside of their apartment while her daughter watches. Now, this altercation started inside and then spilled outside. The neighbors will see Jared slashing Jennifer's throat. Now, this is the worst possible outcome in this situation, Aaron. And I know Jennifer felt that he was dangerous enough to call 911. But she obviously didn't think that he was going to murder her. She was taking steps to get away from him. She was planning on taking their daughter and leaving, and he decided to show up where she was at.
So in order to understand this, we need to know some of their history.
Jennifer Martell was 27 years old at the time, and she was with Jared Remy, and they had one child together. Jared Remy was 34 years old at the time, and he happened to be Jerry Remy's son. Jerry Remy is a very famous sports broadcaster.
And former Boston Red Sox player.
Yeah.
For those of you who are massive baseball fans or live in Massachusetts, you probably know all about Jerry Remy.
So Jared, being the son of a high-profile, famous person, he apparently didn't have a lot of structure in his life or a lot of discipline. He was able to get away with a lot of things because his father was who he was.
From what we can see, Jared Remy's criminal record dates back to 1998, where he was charged with violence against persons, assault and battery with a dangerous weapon, threats and intimidation of a witness. There are also charges for drug crimes and malicious destruction of property, as well as a history of violating his probation.
He had multiple restraining orders against him from previous relationships.
And these resulted in him having a no contact with some of these plaintiffs. So very serious situations here. But as far as we can tell, the media has reported that even dating back to when he was in school, he was known to be very aggressive, very unruly.
He was very much into sports, probably an influence from his father, very competitive, but as some people call it, the alpha male mentality. He felt like he was the one that should get all the spotlight. He was the one that should be in charge. And if anyone disagreed with him, he was the one that was being victimized, not the other person that he was beating up.
In 1996, his father asked the Weston police to talk to his son about what he called troubling behavior after a breakup. And it's because Jared was making these harassing phone calls to his ex and had gotten physical with her. Now, right there, you might say his father is trying to figure out a way to deal with his unruly son, but it doesn't work because the police officer spoke with the family later and said Jared was very disrespectful and very dismissive about any potential restraining orders or even being arrested. He didn't care.
In February of 1996, the police again were called to Weston High. Jared had a altercation with another boy. Jared was not a student at this school. So the other boy was dating his ex-girlfriend, and Jared just could not tolerate seeing his ex with somebody else. So he decided to go and pick a fight with this boy. Three girls at the school told the police that Jared said he was going to come back and shoot this boyfriend of his ex.
And obviously there are some situations that he may have been involved in, but wasn't proven.
I just think that a pattern of behavior kind of speaks for itself, but without seeing evidence, I won't take anything just on the face of it. But this sounds like his personality. This sounds like his pattern of behavior.
When he was 19, he and his 16-year-old girlfriend had a child. This was in 1997. And the following year, he attacked this now ex-girlfriend in his parents' driveway. And he was doing this while she was holding their child. And then he attacked her vehicle. And of course, he was picked up and charged with assault and battery and property destruction. And this was about a couple months later, but he received a continuance without a finding or probation without having a conviction on his permanent record. So he ended up being sentenced to 1 year probation with counseling. And this is something that happens with Jared is he's ordered to get counseling. Yeah. But of course, as we know, he doesn't benefit from any counseling.
In December of that same year, he'll end up taking a restraining order out against his ex, Tiffany, and alleged that she and her boyfriend had threatened him. Again, he's no longer with her, and he's the one that's harassing her, but now he's saying, oh, they're threatening me, so I need a restraining order.
He's the victim.
Yeah. In October of 1999, he allegedly hit a friend and former classmate with a beer bottle because he was angry. He was spending time with his former girlfriend. He was charged with assault and battery with a dangerous weapon for that one. This is controlling. This is narcissistic controlling behavior. You're spending time with a former girlfriend. I don't agree with this, so I'm going to hit you. It's like, there's no logic to it. It's just anger and controlling.
Now let's move ahead. In March of 2000, Jared had a roommate named Andrew. He reported that Jared had come to where he worked and had threatened to kill him. The reason he was doing this was because he was blaming Andrew for his most recent breakup. Now, this roommate didn't go for a restraining order, but when he spoke to police, he did say, "Tell Jared to leave me alone." And then he went even further and said, "You know, you can find steroids in Jared's closet." Now, Jared denied having steroids, and he in turn said his roommate was a drug dealer. So, of course, the police, they want to search this room, right? Yeah. So they go into this this place, and inside a gym bag, they found some weapons, these hunting knives and uncapped syringes. Now, Jared said he had used steroids, but was no longer doing that. But he was charged with possessing hypodermic needles without a prescription or being registered in a needle exchange program. Sounds like the roommate was telling the truth, and he wasn't, if we had to analyze that one, eh?
Yeah.
But, and should this surprise us, but in the following month, Jared was arrested because he was screaming at his mother, and when officers showed up, he elbowed one in the stomach.
That's assaulting a police officer, and typically, you don't get away with that. Typically, when police officers show up and they see a big, huge monster of a man who is being aggressive, they take care of business, but he's the son of Jerry.
That same month, Lisa, an ex-girlfriend of his, reported that Jared threatened to kill her if they didn't get back together. So obviously there's a lot of jealousy going on here and a lot of anger issues. In May of 2000, Jared received two more continuances without a finding for disturbing the peace and hypodermic needle possession. He would go on to violate his probation for the first CWOF and was ordered to submit to random substance screenings, drug and alcohol tests, and possible counseling.
I hate to sound like a broken record here, but most of us, if we had this record, even up until this point, we would have been spending time behind bars. We would be wearing an ankle monitor. We would have no access to phones, or we'd be on the lockdown. But Jared, he's getting a lot of slaps on the wrist, but they are building up. They are piling up for him.
Oh yeah, there's a pile here. January 2001, Jared was again charged with threatening to kill Tiffany. Jared had called his ex, who had sole custody of their son. He had asked to take his son on an unsupervised visit. Now, the mother said no because Jared wasn't doing his part. He wasn't attending parenting classes, so he was only allowed supervised visits. So Jared flipped out, cursed her out, used racial slurs against her and her boyfriend, and threatened to kill her and her boyfriend.
What a guy.
Yeah, a few months later, he's charged with assault and battery with a dangerous weapon for hitting another man with a beer bottle. This is it's the same thing happening over and over again, just with different people. But it's all about his behavior. And again, where is anyone to stop him?
These police officers, they are responding, they are arresting him. But at the same time, they don't control what he ultimately gets charged with. They don't control what happens later. And because of who he is, nobody wants to really put the hammer down on Jared.
In the fall of 2002, in September, a girlfriend got a restraining order against him. This is a woman named Ryan, because he threatened to kill her and her friends. Apparently, he got into an argument with her and said he was going to make her life a living hell. Then he keyed her friend's car and slashed her tires. Then he started harassing them by calling the house multiple times. So, of course, she had to call the police. But just months later, the girlfriend, as well as the prosecutors, requested to dismiss the case because she didn't want to testify.
Some of these arrests and court dates, the victims are talking to Jared's parents, and they're saying, "Hey, we know he did wrong, but just drop the charges, or just, you know, let's just work things out. Like, let's not take this all the way to court. Sometimes they agree.
Now, there were some more incidents that happened in 2003, another beer bottle incident, more danger to himself and others situations. But in July of 2003, Jared showed up at his girlfriend's workplace. This is Ryan's workplace. And he yelled at her. And when she came outside, he punched her. Now, she declined to file a restraining order, but the police issued a warrant for his arrest for assault and battery and threatening to commit a crime.
With so many arrests, you would think that this would do something, right? What happens?
Well, I mean, the police spoke with him, but he also contacted Ryan and was yelling at her and asking her, "Why did you say I hit you?" And he told the police, he goes, "I never threatened her." There's also another car that gets keyed, more threats. It's just this constant rage, I feel, coming from Jared against the world that's wronging him. It just seems like there's no way to stop this guy. And we've used the term red flags in previous episodes, Justin. This guy is a red flag.
He is a walking red flag.
So this assault case gets dismissed and Jared gets released on revised probation. He has to live at home and report to probation 3 times a week. Well, the day after he went to court, he gets arrested for driving with a suspended license. And the police find in his car a bottle of steroids and 3 hypodermic syringes.
I'm at a loss for words at this point, Aaron. I just think, put this guy away.
Well, in July of 2004, Ryan, his girlfriend, decided to leave the apartment. But her mother ends up contacting the police because apparently Ryan and Jared were fighting. Ryan said that she was going to leave with her things, but Jared said she could only take one thing with her. So he started destroying items of hers so that she could only take one thing. So somehow Jared ends up on the line with his mom, and Ryan, of course, is trying to leave, and he hit her 3 times in the face with the cordless phone.
Police are going to be called. He is going to be arrested and charged with 5 counts of assault and battery with a dangerous weapon and 1 count of intimidating a witness.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
A lot of these legal problems are going to come back on him, and he's going to end up pleading guilty to assault and battery with a dangerous weapon. 4 counts of assault and battery and intimidation in January of 2006. He will finally end up spending 81 days in jail awaiting trial. He's released. He's ordered to pay fees, ordered to complete a battering intervention program, a mental health evaluation. He's going to be getting random drug tests and a suspended sentence for his 2 years of probation. He's getting 2 years of probation. I know a guy, Aaron, who merely said, "I'll take care of those people over there." Like, he didn't even say, "I'm going to kill them" or anything. He just said, "I'll take care of them." And he got 10 years probation, and he had no priors before that. But here we have Jared, who has a criminal record a mile long, and he's getting 2 years probation after spending 80 something days behind bars.
And we didn't get into it, but he assaulted Ryan again before he pleaded guilty. And this was a very violent attack. And so the problem with this is, Justin, when we talk about domestic violence and about how it seems like we're not taking it seriously enough, we just have all these examples, right? You and I read up on cases we don't always cover, but we read about all these cases, and it seems like there are too many situations where the violent offender is basically given a slap on the wrist, right?
Yeah.
That's the problem here.
Yeah. I always make the joke, like if they were selling drugs or had drugs on them, they would probably be put away for a long time. But instead, when it's a violent act, it seems to just, especially when it comes to domestic violence, it just never seems to be taken seriously.
Yeah, I really fear at times that we're still in a society where it's seen as, well, they had a spat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is it a spat if you have someone who's as huge as this guy is beating a woman and then grabbing her by the hair and dragging her to another room?
Hitting someone over the head with a phone. Back then, there were big, heavy plastic things. It would hurt a lot.
Or punching a woman in the face or in the stomach. These are things that he's done. And it seems like it's a slap on the wrist and go back out to society. I mean, do these arresting officers just enjoy picking this guy up and talking with him? I'm joking, of course. But I mean, at what point does someone say, okay, we can't allow this guy to walk the streets without doing something different, right? Because these mental health evaluations, random drug tests, suspended sentences, you know, a batterer intervention program. When has this made a difference to Jared Remy? Because as far as we can see, it never made a difference.
Yeah, we're 10 years into his criminal record and he's getting worse. So none of this has helped. None of this has rehabilitated him in any sort of way.
Well, let's get to Jared and Jennifer Martell's relationship. They met in the summer of 2007 at a barbecue. Jennifer was there with a Red Sox security guard, which at the time, Jared was also a security guard for the Red Sox. Jennifer was born in Arizona. Her family ended up moving back to Massachusetts when she was just a young girl. And her parents were Brian and Patricia Martell. Jennifer graduated from Taunton High School in 2004. Now, we know a little bit more about Jennifer thanks to Richard Martell Sr. He talked to the Taunton Daily Gazette and said, "Jen was an outgoing person who liked to have fun. I had never seen her yelling at anybody. She had a good personality. She worked hard. She worked at various places, sometimes two jobs, and never complained about it." At the time, Jennifer was an assistant manager at Market Basket and was taking classes to be a teacher. Now, as you said before, they had a daughter born in September of 2008. Which I think prompted their moving in together, and they ended up getting engaged in 2009. Now, Jared worked security for the Red Sox at Fenway Park until August of 2009. He was fired when he and another security guard were implicated in a steroid scandal, which is not surprising. Again, take a look at pictures of Jared Remy, and you'll see maybe the poster boy for steroids.
Getting fired from this security position definitely took a toll on him, and he didn't seem to ever be able to put his life back together after that. Not that he had it together ever, but he seemed to be holding down a job, at least for a little while.
And I'd say it's pretty serious if Jared Remy is getting fired from Fenway Park when his dad is Jerry Remy. I don't think that's something that happens lightly.
No. They took their time with this decision and were just like, no, we can't have this guy around here.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people would say the inquiry itself wasn't very deep, but it probably didn't need to be deep, you know? I think it's one of those things where everyone knew what was going on and said, we need to put a stop to this. But of course, you know, this is the kind of thing that can tarnish the image of the team, right? I mean, what if he's getting steroids for some of the athletes? So they can't really afford to have him around. So Jared and Jennifer had an apartment in Waltham, Massachusetts.
While they were together, all their friends and family said that they had a very volatile relationship. Jared was very tough and possessive. He would always go into rages. And Jennifer was very independent. So this isn't a good combination. Because of her independence, she didn't ask for a lot of help. She's like, I'm going to deal with this myself. I don't need someone else to come in and be my savior. But she didn't know who she was dealing with.
On August 15th, 2013, when Jennifer was murdered, multiple neighbors heard the attack because it was so loud. One neighbor reported that she heard this banging, and when she went outside, she could see Jared with a hand around Jennifer's throat, his left hand. And this is when they were leaving the apartment. They were going out back. And she actually tried to stop Jared. She started hitting him in the head over and over and over again. But again, this is a very large, powerful man. And he probably didn't even notice it, for all I know. It's sometime shortly before then that these neighbors realized that he had a knife and was stabbing Jennifer. And then another neighbor, this time a man, got involved and tried to stop him, but Jared slashed at him. So not only was he strangling her with his left hand, but he was stabbing her with his right hand. And then he ended up using both his hands with the knife at the end. And this is terrible because there were all these warning signs with Jared Remy. And when he was actually carrying out this final attack on his girlfriend, many people tried to stop him, but they couldn't. They just couldn't do it. I think the only way they could have done it, I mean, someone would have had to have shot him, Justin.
Multiple times. It wouldn't have been one unless they got a headshot on him. They would have had to shoot him multiple times because he just wasn't going to stop for anything.
Now, their daughter was inside the apartment, but uninjured. Jennifer was found to have multiple stab wounds. She had been killed on the back patio of the apartment. The wounds were to her shoulder and neck, and she was missing her shirt. Witnesses said that after Jared finished attacking Jennifer, he took off his tank top and then covered her face with it. Now, one thing that disgusts me, Justin, is on the following day, on August 16th, Jared was formally charged with murder, held without bail, and he pleaded not guilty. But his attorney, this is what disgusts me, his attorney said that the cuts on Jared's head and hands were defensive wounds.
As if somehow you can justify self-defense in this case. Yeah. If there were defensive wounds, it was because Jennifer was trying to defend herself from him. And that's what it always comes back to.
Well, and the neighbors.
Yeah.
I mean, the reason why he has any injuries at all is because he needed to be stopped. And I realize that everyone deserves an attorney. That's their right. And they're bound to say stuff like this because that's their job. But it doesn't mean I can't be upset about it because it's just disgusting. So luckily, prosecutors are on this. And at the arraignment, they state that the murder was a vicious attack. And they even talked about how one neighbor tried to pull Jared off of Jennifer, but was unable to move him. And that's when Jared swung his knife around at that neighbor. Now, of course, everyone wanted to know, what would Jerry Remy say, Jared's father? And he got on Twitter and said, words cannot describe my wife's and my grief. Son or not, I am at a loss for words articulating my disgust and remorse over this senseless and tragic act.
I mean, that's all he can say right now, I guess.
Yeah. Now, there was another witness, Ben Ray, who talked to WBZ-TV, and this really drives home what I said earlier. He said, neighbors tried to help. We tried to stop it. We couldn't. People stepped in to try and save a girl's life, and we couldn't. And again, Justin, this is about the most intimidating guy you'd end up seeing. And people still stepped in, women, men, anyone around. They all tried to stop him, and they just couldn't do anything to him. Now, Jim Lyons, a Massachusetts state representative, urged the Middlesex District Attorney, Marion Ryan, to step down because they allowed Jared to be released from jail on August 14th. And this is what Lyon said. The facts speak volumes that this man has a violent history. When someone's been arrested 15 times since 1998 with four assault and batteries, it's a simple answer. The man should have been held for a dangerousness hearing. Not wrong. Now, this was met with a response by the Middlesex District Attorney, who said that the recommendation for Jared to be released on personal recognizance was based on information known to us at the time. That's kind of like, I'm going to answer you with a non-answer, I would say.
I mean, the information they had at the time, they had all of his arrest record. They had all of his history. They have access to all of those things, but they chose not to keep him behind bars.
Well, response or not, Marion Ryan announced on August 21st that Norfolk First Assistant District Attorney Jean Marie Carroll and former Essex District Attorney Kevin Burke would do an independent review. Now, is it any surprise what the findings of this review were?
Not really.
I mean, what did you say, right? I mean, their wording is the district attorney's office did not take the proper steps to consider all of the information before them approving the decision to release Remy on personal recognizance. I don't understand. Did not take the proper steps to consider all of the information before them approving of the decision to release Remy on personal recognizance. It's like they didn't even look. I'm wondering if they just saw the name, Justin.
That's it.
Because a lot of people believe that happens, right, in this world?
Yeah. I can't even say that his father was calling and actively trying to get him out of jail. Because as you like to say, sometimes it's what? Who knows you, right?
Right. I remember seeing a shirt many years ago that said, it's not who you know, it's who knows you.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people just say, oh, it's so-and-so, I'll handle it.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying he didn't make any calls. I'm just saying that's not always what needs to happen. Sometimes people just see whose name is on the sheet before them and they go, uh-oh.
They don't want to be that guy who gets blamed for taking down Jared Remy's son.
But this review also points out that there probably is some deficiencies in training, supervision, or handling of domestic violence situations of cases. Again, all obvious stuff. I'm glad they're talking about it. But, you know, it's, we say this, Justin, where we talk about empathy, having empathy for victims. I mean, the people who have the authority, have the ability to make a difference, to save someone, a lot of times they disappoint us. But we're just not sure why. They have this ability, they have this power, and then they don't use it. They release people like Jared back on the streets. Again, you can look through his criminal history, and it's just year in, year out from 1998 on, he's a violent, dangerous individual. And it was just a matter of time, it seems, before someone was killed at his hands.
So Jared initially says he's not guilty. Jared initially says that, you know, when asked if he'd killed Jennifer, he said, no, that's ridiculous. How dumb would I have to be? I loved her. I still love her.
Yeah, he told the Boston Herald that. What is he trying to say? I mean, there were multiple witnesses who saw him do this.
It's his ego and anger has just blinded him. You know, he goes on to say that she threatened him with their child. Meaning, you know, she was going to take his daughter away as he sees it in his mind. But he never like had enough self-awareness to know that she was trying to defend their child and defend herself and get away from the actual danger. Whereas he's saying she was threatening me, so I had to do what I had to do.
Yeah, breaking that down a little bit. Obviously, this mother knows that what was happening around the child was bad. The child shouldn't have to endure a life like this. So even though Jared would say, oh, I never laid a hand on my child, no, he's committing violence around that child. He's making her life hell. But yes, he seems to turn it all around on Jennifer, talking about how she threatened to take their kid away. from him, not allow him to see the child, somehow seeming to justify his actions. There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. Just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called Storyworth. Storyworth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mom or grandmother for years to come. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. What was your favorite toy as a child? Or what's your favorite memory of your grandmother? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. After a year of responses, Storyworth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. My mom completed her story, and each of her kids now has a copy to read and share with their kids. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll cherish for years. Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/GenY. That's storyworth.com/GenY to save $10 on your first purchase.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better. Notice things like your hair and your nails feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
And while he's waiting for his trial, Jared Remy is trying to, I guess, make a name for himself behind bars, waiting for this trial. And he goes up to a man named Jeremy Hodges, and he throws hot coffee in the man's face, and then he hits him with a plastic chair because Jeremy was arrested for possession of child abuse images. And Jared says, "Look what I did. You should be proud of me. I attacked a child molester." I mean, like, he's expecting to be treated like a hero because he did an unprovoked attack on a man in behind bars. That's, I don't even know if this man had even faced trial yet or not. Who knows if he was guilty? I have no idea. But Jared's going around and attacking people, trying to make a name for himself because this is his behavior, is I'm in charge and I'm going to take down anyone that I don't agree with or I see as weaker than me. I'm surprised by this whole scenario because he's not even in prison. This is just jail where he's being held for trial and he's already attacking people, regardless of what they were in there for. He's just out of control and even behind bars.
Well, what I'm noticing here is that he seems to justify his actions, and it doesn't matter whether it's against a criminal or a woman he was dating. He's finding ways to justify his violence.
Every time.
So the question going into this, Justin, was, is Jared Remy going to fight this?
This is a strange turn of events because I was not expecting what happens next. What does he do, Aaron?
Well, Jared had been informed that if he pleaded guilty to the charges against him, he could no longer challenge any actions the government has taken against him in regards to the murder charges, right? Well, on May 27, 2014, Jared Remy pleaded guilty to 4 indictments at a pretrial hearing: first-degree murder, assault by means of a dangerous weapon, assault and battery, and violating a restraining order. So he waived his rights. And after prosecutors read a summary of his crimes, Jared said, "Yes, I did," when asked if he had committed the acts outlined by the prosecution. And he added that Jennifer had a knife in her hand and was threatening me about my daughter. So even though he's pleading guilty, he still has to get in that jab at his now dead ex-girlfriend, somehow blaming her for what happened. Because that's how I take it, Justin. I mean, he can plead guilty to all the charges, but he shouldn't have brought this up because it's like he's putting an asterisk on it.
Yeah, I did what I did, and here's why. And she was threatening me with my child. But he does do the right thing by pleading guilty on all charges. And I watched the whole courtroom video on this. It's 20 something minutes long of him understanding the charges and saying he's not going to challenge them.
Yeah, I do wonder what goes on with Jared, because he did have this great life that he threw away and he had this famous father, yet he didn't seem to respect him. But maybe he tried to get back in good with his family here, because he had a final statement that included, "I would like to say, blame me for this and not my family. They thought of Jen as their fourth kid." And then he talked about his love for drugs. He said Jen was an angel and always will be an angel. He said he warned Jennifer not to threaten him about access to their daughter. "I always told Jen she could leave, but do not threaten me with my daughter. That night she had a knife in her hand and threatened me with my daughter, so I killed her. I don't think it's right when women use their kids against their fathers." So once again, Justin, he seems to head the right way and then detour back to his old ways of, this was someone else's fault. Boo-hoo me.
It's so stereotypical. You can script out all of his behavior and dialogue because it's really easy to figure out what his next move is, and it's never going to be a good one.
No. And again, he starts off by saying, blame me for this, not my family. Almost like he's going to start, you know, thanking his family for being there for him. But then it turns into, you know, my girlfriend used my kid against me, so she had to be killed.
And I think that he's trying to protect his family, but at no point is he ever addressing Jennifer or her family. It's all selfish.
Jennifer's family released a statement. "We do not have words to express our emotions regarding the tragic and senseless murder of our daughter, Jennifer. We hope that Jared has remorse for what he did to her and to our granddaughter. If just one family learns from our tragedy by recognizing the warning signs of domestic violence, it will help us to honor Jennifer's memory." I like how they talked about the granddaughter. You know, she may not have suffered direct violence, but she was there for this. It's my hope that people recognize that you don't actually have to be punched in the face or hit with a beer bottle to be a victim, because their daughter was a victim as well. She just was in that environment.
So her family is just trying to get the word out, raise awareness about this. So if anyone else finds themselves in a situation that they feel like they can't get out of, well, maybe hearing Jennifer's story will give them the courage to do what they need to do.
I don't think there are any easy answers here. You might have a sister or an aunt, a mother who is suffering from domestic violence, and you don't know what to do. Obviously, there are people you can reach out to for assistance. You can contact the National Domestic Violence Hotline at 800-799-7233. But I think the main thing here is to always be ready to offer support, and especially listen to those who you suspect are suffering from domestic violence. As we know, the authorities don't always do their part.
Thank you.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
I understand that anybody who's paid attention to the media would have to come to the conclusion that I killed my wife.
Hi, my name is Zach Stewart Pontier. I'm one of the filmmakers behind The Jinx, and I'm excited to bring you the official Jinx podcast. We'll be revisiting all 6 episodes of Part 1 and watching along with Part 2 as it airs on Max, starting April 21st.
Bye-bye.
The official Jinx podcast. Listen on Max or wherever you get your podcasts.